Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the Publisher Lab. I'm Shelby King, and today alongside me I have my colleague Sarah Clow.
Thanks for having me.
So Sarah, can you share a little bit about what you do here at Ezoic?
Yeah, so I'm head of social media and marketing partnerships at Ezoic. So I work with all of our partners. I manage our social media platforms and our brand reputation online.
And then, is this your first time on the Publisher Lab podcast?
So no, my first time on the Publisher Lab was actually my very first day at Ezoic. And I was thrown into it kind of by Tyler. He was like, "Hey, do you want to come sit in and listen?" And I was like, "Sure." And then he put a mic in front of my face and said, "I'm just going to ask you a few questions and just be honest." And I was mortified. And I was like, "What kind of job did I just sign up for?"
Great way to start off
But
a
I'm still
new.
here, so
So it all worked
it
out.
worked
Well,
out.
now you have another chance to hop on,
Redeem
and
myself.
hopefully you feel a little more comfortable this time around. We at least gave you a heads up
Oh
that you
yeah.
would be co-hosting with me today. So yeah, I'm excited. We've got a lot of cool topics going on this week. The first one I wanted to start off with was from AdExchanger. So it's titled Google Opens Its Black Box and Shares Fees Across Its Ad Products. So, in anticipation of an antitrust case this summer, Google is now sharing new information about its take rate, which has never been disclosed before. So, there's been a lot of pressure on Google from the programmatic industry to be more transparent. Especially when other independent ad tech companies like AppNexus and the Rubicon Project have publicly shared their take rates. So, according to blog posts from Google, when an advertiser's $1 in media spend starts and ends with Google Tech, publishers receive 69 cents of every dollar, or 69%, and Google takes the other 31%. And so, this is from their 2019 aggregate data. So, an analysis of the top 100 news publishers using Google found that they sold three quarters of their inventory directly through other partners. So Google charges fees based on the volume of ad requests, which is about 1% in that kind of setup. And for the remaining quarter of the ads that are filled programmatically, Google charges around 16% in fees for the impressions that it handles. So Google claims that given how many impressions publishers fill directly, it takes around 5% of the publisher's overall revenue, which is actually a little bit smaller than what I would have assumed. So there are a couple caveats to this. Publishers may be paying higher or lower fees if they're selling ads through different ad exchanges or DSPs. And Google's analysis lumped in ads sold through open bidding, which charges around 5 to 10% in fees, with ads sold by Google Ad Manager, which charges up to 20% in fees. So it kind of slightly lowers the average when you add in these ads sold through open bidding. So they didn't exactly share how AdSense kind of fits into the equation. But Google has previously said that the take rate for its AdSense product is about 68% on average, so quite a bit higher. But Google did want to note that it doesn't double stack its fee when a Google Ad Manager publisher uses AdSense to backfill within Ad Manager. So at least you're not getting charged twice for that. So there's that. Yeah, it's really interesting just because it's kind of been a secret this entire time. And there has been a lot of pressure for them to kind of open up on this. So yeah, I was wondering if you've seen anything on social media or have any kind of comments on that.
Well, I'm all about transparency, and so I'm encouraging that. I think one thing that stood out to me that's interesting that you said kind of in the beginning there, one of the independent ad tech companies that you mentioned, I've personally seen their public tax filing, from 2018. On their website, they say that they take 20% of revenue. But if you go look at their public tax filing and you do the math yourself, they took a 40-60 rev share. So yes, I Google is, they're trying to be more transparent, but It is just interesting to me to see, like, does that transparency really give us, like, all the answers that we want?
Yeah, and how do you verify that?
Exactly.
I mean, it's still definitely a problem. I mean, at least opening this up, we can kind of start a conversation at it. There's a baseline to go off of.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely still a lot more digging that people need to do, even though these companies are saying publicly, like, this is what we're taking and this is the fees that we're charging. There's definitely still more due diligence there. The next topic I have, I'm pretty sure this one is from Search Engine Journal, and it's about how Instagram is going to surpass Twitter as a popular news source. So this one to me was really interesting. Instagram is quickly becoming a popular source for news, and this is for users ages 18 to 24. So they're set to overtake Twitter, according to some new research. So the 2020 Reuters Institute Digital News Report finds that the amount of users turning to Instagram for news has doubled since 2018. So, of course, younger people are behind the shift as expected. So, 2/3 of people under 25 say they use Instagram as a news source. Users that are aged 18 to 24 are more considerably likely to access news via social media than a website or a dedicated news app. So this is notable because Instagram hasn't really traditionally been a destination for breaking news. Real-time news updates have always kind of been Twitter's forte, while Instagram has been more of a platform where people share photos and videos for entertainment. But it's actually Instagram's specialization in visual content that has been making it really appealing for news as a source to young people. So with all that being said, Reuters did find that social media is the least trusted source of digital news, which is not all that surprising, but I'm definitely surprised to see Instagram kind of taking over as a news source for young people.
Me too. I was shocked by this article and these numbers, just because, you know, I feel like in the past, like, Twitter has been, you know, the one to take the lead. And even Snapchat too. I mean, they just have, you know, so many options to get in there and view news that Instagram doesn't have.
Just out of curiosity, Sarah, where do you typically go for your news?
I've always gone to Twitter. I know a lot of people get their news from Facebook, but for me, Twitter has been just, like, the number one. I haven't actually, like, tweeted on my account. I've had it since, I think, 2009 or 10. I haven't tweeted in years, but I keep the app because I check it every day for just news and updates.
What about Twitter for you makes it the most appealing or the easiest way to get news?
I think because you can just easily go in there and it has the top trending, and then it has top trending for your location, and you can refresh it every hour, and it gives you, like, still what's going on, what's trending. I like that it covers, you know, politics. It also covers entertainment. It covers sports. You know, it really hits all the bases for me, and I feel like it's just a good summary. And then you can also go in and see kind of what just the public is saying. And that's what I really like about it, that I think kind of makes it different from Facebook or Snapchat.
Yeah, that definitely is interesting. I never really thought about the public commentary that may come with news on Twitter. I personally get a lot of my news from Snapchat. I'm like one of those weird people. I never use Snapchat to send messages to my friends or anything. I pretty much exclusively use it for the content that the publishers post on it. But one of the things that I really love about Snapchat is that pretty much the majority of it is all video, really short clips that play back to back and kind of just give you those really quick consumable snippets that you kind of are looking for.
Yeah.
So I could see why Instagram would also be really successful at that too. I feel like Instagram kind of mixes the two things about, you know, Twitter and Snapchat. You get that really visual, quick content, but there also is that, you know, community response too.
I totally agree. I think it'll be interesting to see what Instagram does with this information. Maybe we'll start to see a new tab appear, you know, sometime here in the future, if they make, you know, a separate page just for news the way that Twitter has and Snapchat has.
Yeah, definitely. We've seen Facebook news in the past. I honestly am not a Facebook user. I'm not sure what it's like from a user standpoint on what Facebook News is, but I know for a lot of publishers, Facebook News has kind of been a it's been a back and forth battle. But I mean, Instagram is also coming out with a lot of different features for content creators to monetize. So there definitely could be a feature out there on that platform for sure.
I agree. We'll have to see.
All right. So actually, this is a bit of a different episode. Sarah, you've pulled a couple of topics to talk about.
From DCN, Digital Content Next. This is a promising title. It's Advertising's Return to Normal Following COVID-19. So that's kind of an exciting headline for publishers, as we know. So with the U.S. slowly reopening businesses and beginning to return to normal, advertising is making a comeback. So in January and February of 2020, ad spend was up 8% year over year. However, when COVID-19 hit the U.S., ad spend was down 36% year over year in March. So now, nearly 4 months after COVID hitting the U.S., nearly every state has started reopening businesses to some capacity, and we're starting to see ad dollars returning to the market. So the first one is the automotive industry. Ad spend during the week of May 24th was nearly double than what it was just 3 weeks ago. Brands that are reviving their ad spend in recent weeks are Toyota, GM, Nissan, Subaru, and a few others. Believe it or not, domestic tourism is picking back up. The week of May 24th saw more than 3 times the advertising spend than just 1 month prior, with more than 350 active local tourism bureaus buying. So that is promising. It also says that year over year spend during the week of May 24th still remains down 63%. However, this is a stark improvement over April, where ad spend was down 89% year over year. So we are seeing some improvements there. In April, I thought this was interesting. A study found that people were using personal care products 11 fewer times per week due to shelter in place. It's kind of gross to think about, but you know what? Like, nobody's leaving the house. But however, in the last 2 weeks, hair care ad spend has been up year over year for the first time since March. So this would probably ring true to like any other, you know, personal care, hygiene, maybe cosmetic products. We can start to see ad spend picking up there. Real estate advertising, as we know, was hit hard amid COVID-19, it was down 55% in April, but ad spend levels in mid-May were 34% higher than they were in April. So we're seeing early signs of recovery there. And finally, the reopening of gyms around the country has resulted in quite a strong bounce back for health and fitness brand advertising. Ad spend during the last week of May was at its highest point that it has been in 11 weeks. So we're still far off from a full recovery, but this data shows early signs of recovery is certainly a great start. It helps showing that industries feel confident and optimistic about the road ahead, you know, with businesses and everything opening. So I think these numbers are pretty promising.
Yeah, it's funny because as you're going through that list, I feel like just in my personal life, I'm really like, I can definitely relate to a lot of that with domestic tourism. I'm finally kind of looking into booking a trip to Hawaii or somewhere within the US.
Yeah.
And then of course, personal care products. Mm-hmm. I totally really.
Yeah. Like buying clothes and makeup again, like things that you just didn't really need to do during quarantine.
Yeah. So it'll be definitely be interesting to see as life kind of changes what that will affect in terms of ad spend, but we're definitely seeing some supporting data of this according to the Ad Revenue Index. So for those who don't know what the Ad Revenue Index is, it tracks ad rates across the entire industry, across all the different verticals and niches. So you can actually compare what ad rates are to historical ad rates from the past 4 to 5 years. So if you just Google Ad Revenue Index, you can look at it yourself and mess around with it. It's free for everyone to look at. But there's definitely been a huge uptick in June, and ad rates are the highest they've been so far in 2020, which is a great thing. Some of this growth may be due to the fact that we're nearing the end of another quarter. So ad rates have the tendency to kind of climb up as a quarter progresses. And there's usually a little boost at the end, at the last couple of weeks of a quarter, as advertisers are trying to use up the last of their ad budgets. But The good thing is that ad rates this June are actually up from June of last year. So if we're looking year over year, there is still some growth. So I think that's a good indication. But yeah, like you said, we'll kind of just have to wait to see how things play out. I know a lot of people are saying that Q3 is going to be where we see how the rest of the year plays out. But it seems like things are looking up, but we'll get a clearer picture maybe in a couple more months.
So my final topic I have today, this is from Search Engine Land. The title is Google Agrees to Start Paying for News Content. So European news publishers and governments have been trying to get Google to pay them to license their content for years now. After fighting the idea of paying publishers to display or link to their content, Google is now ready to comply. Google announced earlier this week that the company would begin paying for high-quality content for a new news experience that's launching later this year. But they didn't disclose any further information about what this news experience will actually be. So still a little bit of a mystery there. Google says it has signed licensing deals with both local and national publishers in Germany, Australia, and Brazil, with quote unquote more coming soon. Google says that it will pay for access to paywall protected content on behalf of users under this new licensing program. The consumer experience will appear in Google News and in the Google Discover feed. It may be a significant evolution of the current full coverage treatment of certain stories in Google News. Search Engine Land does say that we can assume this will be a global program and extend to the US, which I found very interesting, but Google has not confirmed that. So we'll have to wait and see. Now, we will learn more about whether this program will be a meaningful source of revenue for publishers when it launches later this year and as it kind of plays out.
Yeah, this is definitely interesting. I think the most interesting thing about it is that there's so much stuff under wraps. It just you kind of like it's definitely eye-catching, but there's really kind of no further information or details about that. I'd say it's probably not something that publishers in the U.S. should hold their breath for.
I agree.
You know, news content in its own is kind of a whole other beast from other types of publications. But, you know, publishers have learned in the past that they should be really wary about handing over their content to big platforms just because they've been burned over and over again. But it's definitely worth keeping an eye on things. It definitely reminds me of Apple News, when Apple News first started coming out from, you know, from a user standpoint.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, I would love to have access to a bunch of different publications and get stuff that's behind their paywalls. But, you know, from the publisher's point of view, it's not as sweet as a bargain for them. But it is an interesting development for sure. I'm excited to see where that kind of plays out.
I'm wondering what the kind of turn was because, you know, the article states that Google has been fighting this for so long. There was another article that covered, you know, this in 2014, Google shut down Google News in Spain in response to a Spanish law passed that would have compelled Google to pay licensing revenues to Spanish publishers. So they've been fighting this for a long time. You know, it's too early to know exactly what it is that made them kind of change their mind, but we'll just have to see. They didn't really reveal too much detail and information about what this news experience is going to be. So I think it'll be interesting whenever it does roll out.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's all the topics that we've got going on this week. I think one thing I do want to mention is that we are going to try and host a virtual Pubtelligence. We've talked about these Pubtelligence events in past episodes. They are basically just free events for publishers. We get experts in different fields to talk about different topics. So we are planning to host one towards the end of July, and we'll definitely keep making announcements as things kind of get more solidified. But so that's kind of one thing to look forward to. Sarah, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
That is it. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
And if you guys have any questions or any comments that you want us to cover in future episodes, you can go to publisherlabpodcast.com and leave those there. Also, if you have a minute to write a review for the podcast, those are like gold to us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Publisher Lab.